Good morning, TNC family, from my home to wherever you are on this second Sunday in March. I want to start today with a question, and here it is. Do you know where you are weak? Do you know where you are weak? And this is an important question to answer for many reasons, in part because the Apostle Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament of the Scriptures, says twice in his letter to the church at Corinth, "When I am weak, then I am strong." And power is made perfect in weakness. In other words, weakness is the soil in which the strength is seeded. Strength is actually produced in a factory called weakness, Paul says. And if you know much about Paul's writing, then you know he consistently links weakness to strength. And he's not doing so you'll form the correct theology. He's doing so in the context of helping communities of real people thrive. Leading New Testament scholar, author N.T. Wright makes this point in his 450-page biography of Paul, where he says that one of the tragedies is that if you want to study Paul, you're likely sent to a department of religion or a bookshelf of religious authors. But he says Paul belongs in the world of politics, culture, economics, and community life, as well as philosophy and religion. Paul is not just out there, in other words, articulating a new vision for God's work in history on a cross, although he is doing that. He is also creating and forming real communities of people who are experimenting with this new way of being a human. And in the process of helping form these communities, Paul is talking a lot about weaknesses being linked to strengths. If you want to form a great community where relationships flourish and people are healthy, he says, then weaknesses and strengths go hand in hand. Now, there's another very helpful book out right now, published this year by Arthur Brooks. Brooks is a social scientist who teaches at the Harvard Business School. And the book is called From Strength to Strength. It's a book about finding success and happiness and purpose. And in the book, and by the way, this is not a work of theology or religion, in the book, Brooks makes the case that Paul is the most successful entrepreneur in human history, greater than Henry Ford and Steve Jobs, because he invented Christianity as an organized religion, Brooks says, which has grown for 2,000 years and today has more than 2 billion followers. Brooks says, quote, "And even though the iPhone's current 1 billion users is impressive, it isn't likely to be the leading product in the year 4,000. And what's Paul's entrepreneurial secret? Well, in this book, Brooks quotes Paul's own words from the letter I mentioned at the start of today that Paul wrote to the church at Corinth around 55 AD. Quote, "I was given a thorn in my flesh," Paul writes, "a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.' Therefore," Paul keeps going, "I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. This is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." And if you just keep on reading Paul's letters, then what you'll keep on getting is how Paul's struggles and weaknesses are real and how they're linked to his strengths. He writes in one place, "I have endured many sleepless nights. I have been hungry and thirsty and have often gone without food. I have shivered in the cold without enough clothing to keep me warm. Then besides all of this, I have the daily burden of my concerns for the churches." And in another letter, Paul writes, look, I don't want you to be ignorant. I am in deep despair of life itself. And later, it seems like Paul is having like a nervous breakdown, or at least dealing with depression. And Paul, the great entrepreneur, you read his letters, and it seems like a terrible marketing strategy to lead with, hey, folks, I'm weak, I'm suffering, I'm sad, I want to die, buy my book. But Paul consistently says that it's in weakness that if you will do the work, you'll find strength. And Paul says you can learn in weakness to give thanks and in weakness to be content in all circumstances. But you'll have to do the work. If you do the work, if you do the work, if you lean into weakness in the right way. And that's the problem, I think, in our culture, because most folks who are feeling weak don't see it as the soil, as the ground for their soon coming strength. Instead, too many folks stagnate in the weakness or just try to run away from the weakness. Think about it, in our culture, the way folks often try to address their sadness, their setbacks, their weaknesses is change jobs because, yeah, the job's the problem. Or change cities because, yeah, the city's the problem. Or change churches because, yeah, the pastor's the problem. And what they do then is they go on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and other social media, and they waste time pretending that those are the real relationships they want to spend their time investing in. It's so sad, TNC. I see it over and over and over. Most people, when they are hurting and feeling weak, they don't stay away from social interaction. They just stay away from healthy social interaction. They don't stay away from activity. They just stay away from healthy activity. And so they stagnate in weakness. But Brooks, in this new book, From Strength to Strength, says, quote, it's possible to get stronger and happier, and the things that nurture happiness and strength are rooted in major scientific literature, neuroscience, and social scientists. He goes on, you don't have to leave it up to chance. You can practice the right habits and be happier at age 75 than 25, and one of the places to find strength is in weakness. And so he says we should not hide or cover up or run from or deny or complain about weaknesses. He says that's a horrible strategy for being strong. The key to strength is leveraging weakness. And so, TNC, what I want to do now is talk to you for a few minutes about three ways that we have to work in our weakness, so that it generates strength. Because if we can get this right, then I think we can begin to see what Paul saw, that weakness is, in fact, the source of his strength. So three ways to work in weakness, and here's the first way. Number one, redefine it. Redefine weakness, because redefining weakness can lead you to a stronger purpose. Emily Esfahani Smith, who's an author, psychologist, professor, writes about this in her book, The Four Pillars of Meaning. She says that the happiest, most fulfilled people have discovered purpose in moments and seasons that feel bad, weak, discouraging, and so on. By redefining the discouraging situation, redefining the weakness. And so in the book, she talks about research she did at the Detroit Zoo, where workers there spend almost 80% of their time doing things like cleaning the habitats, washing, scraping, feeding, hauling, scooping, picking up. And then she writes that the most fulfilled people there are the ones who define their job as, quote, helping the animals stay healthy, being a part of a team of zookeepers around the world devoted to conserving our species. And who are the ones who are unfulfilled and unhappy? The ones who describe their job as, I scoop the poop, I clean the floors. And she goes into hospitals And she finds that the most fulfilled janitors are the ones who describe themselves as being on a team of people that provide healing for the sick, rather than those who say their job is to mop bathroom floors. She writes, quote, "No matter what occupies your days, you can reframe your tasks around a greater purpose, even if you don't feel like you're living in the middle of your calling." In fact, she goes on, "It's often in and through your weakness that you find your opportunity, you discover your strength." A point that Arthur Brooks makes in this book. He uses the story of comedian Stephen Colbert, who has often shared how the worst thing that ever happened to him was when his brother and his father died in a plane crash when he was just 12 years old. Colbert talks about how that really made him who he is. It was a source of tremendous sadness and pain, he says. I would reverse it in a heartbeat if I could. I'm not saying it's the source of my glory, Colbert says. But it is a matter of fact that that void, that weakness, has helped me relate with people and connect with people and understand their fears and hopes and understand my own fears and hopes. In TNC, I'm just saying it turns out that redefining your weakness today as the soil of your strength tomorrow is a better definition of weakness. Which turns out to be sort of the paradox of strength, if you think about it, that strength requires a degree of bad, a window of weakness, a season of unhappiness, so that you can find earned success and overcoming problems and overcoming bad and creating better out of bad. This is why Gretchen Rubin says, quote, "Enjoy the fun of failure. Failure is part of being creative and ambitious and doing something worth doing." And when it comes to your strength, it becomes how and the avenue through which then you're most likely to help others. So you find strength in weakness, and then once it becomes strength, it becomes the avenue through which you bless others. Henry Nouwen talked about this decades ago with his idea of the wounded healer, which is the idea that the place of your healed wounds, your healed weaknesses, that's the area you are most able to help heal others. This is why Philip Yancey, the great author, wrote years ago, and when I read it, I highlighted it and actually transcribed it to a sheet of paper that sits in a small stack near my desk. Yancey writes, quote, "I'll let you in on a dirty little secret. A facility with words may make writers sound confident and wise, but most often we write about what we long for." Thus, he goes on, books on marriage often emerge from difficult marriages, and books on prayer trace back to the author's frustrations with prayer. In other words, if you're an expert in a field, it's likely because you've struggled a lot with it. Weakness is your soil for strength. And so that's our first task, to begin to redefine today's weakness as the source of tomorrow's strength. Which leads to the second way we can work in weakness to discover strength. First, redefine weakness. And number two, share weakness. Because sharing your weakness will actually help you form stronger relationships. First, because hiding things is not your authentic self, and so you will always be uncomfortable and on edge. And you can't find healthy relationships when you're characterized by hiddenness and uncomfortableness and fear. Second, what we most need in life to thrive is love. And the best way to love is to connect with other people and to be unconditionally accepted and loved by them, which cannot happen outside of vulnerability. And often, it's not our strengths that connect us with other people, it's our weaknesses. Strengths actually can intimidate and create walls, and here's how you know. Try talking about your strengths today with people. Tell somebody, Hey, let me tell you about all the things I'm good at. Hey, my career is going awesome, and I'm very well liked, and my finances, they rock, and I have 1,000 friends on Facebook. I have a very high IQ. You know, TNC, brag. It's just not relatable. But you know it is relatable? Sharing weaknesses with honesty and vulnerability and humility. I loved what our TNC elder Anne said in her midweek podcast this week. She said, quote, "The accused and the accusers of life are much more alike than different." And as we move towards sharing our weaknesses, we'll find that we're much more alike than different from folks, and it creates atmospheres of grace and hope and common ground and mutual understanding. I don't know why we hide our weaknesses so much. I do understand that people will try to use them against us, and so we have to be wise about how and where we share. But Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus, he says, "Be completely humble and gentle." And to the believers in Rome, he wrote, "Let your love be sincere, no pretending, no rumors, no gossip and factions, and no fake humility." And this is a great lesson for the church because sadly, many people have dismissed Christianity because it has been dishonest and arrogant and tried to cover up its weaknesses and its confusions and its mistakes. But it's actually by sharing those weaknesses that we can develop stronger relationships and stronger communities. So friends, we need to become experts at sharing our weaknesses. First, redefine weakness. Second, share weakness. And then third, number three, accept weakness. Because accepting your weakness actually can begin to bring you peace. Brooks has a phrase in his book that he uses throughout. He calls it striver's curse. The curse of one who's constantly striving. He writes, quote, "What I found in my research was that a hidden source of anguish nearly universal among people who have done well in their careers is that people who strive to be excellent at what they do often wind up finding their successes increasingly unsatisfying and their relationships lacking and their inevitable decline terrifying. Because everybody," he writes, "is going to peak in their careers and then decline. And so it's wisest to just accept this." And nobody's perfect, friends. To borrow again the words of the Apostle Paul, all have sinned and fallen short. And so instead of pretending and denying weaknesses, we must learn to accept them, accepting that it's not possible to go through life weakness-free. And now listen, accepting it allows you to be stronger. Because if I accept that I am weak, I will have to turn to others and rely on others. And together we're going to be stronger. And if I accept that I don't know everything, then I will have to trust others. And together we will be wiser. And if I accept that I'm a sinner and I'm going to have to rely on grace, then that grace will connect me with an all-loving divine. And if I accept that I alone, by striving, cannot be the solution to every problem, but that some of the solutions are out there, that there's life and beauty and strength out there that I can tap into, then I can begin to see strength in other places. Now notice, in each case, my recognition leads me to see the good around me. That person I can rely on, that expert I can trust, that God who gives me grace, that beauty, that possibility that I will have missed if I'm just focusing on my weaknesses. And what happens is I will begin to find gratitude. Now, this is hard because gratitude is not as easy as it sounds. Sometimes, no matter how hard you try, you end up focusing on not your abundance, not your possibilities, but on your weaknesses. I know it's hard, but Paul says that it's in the learning to accept your weakness that you are free to see the people and things and forces that are available to you that can bring you gratitude and strength. In the book, Brooks tells a powerful story about coming to accept weaknesses. It's the story, some of you may know this story, about Beethoven, the great musician. Many of you know I have a degree in music. I teach piano lessons. I actually get to play Beethoven multiple times every week. And so I especially loved this story. Beethoven, from a very young age, he was recognized as a musical prodigy. And he studied with the world-famous Joseph Haydn, as well as other leading musicians of his day. And he was ambitious and hardworking. And by his late 20s, he was already writing and performing the best music in the world. Yet, in 1801, he wrote this to his doctor, quote, "In the theater, I have to get very close to the orchestra to understand the performers. And from a distance, I do not hear the high notes of the instruments and the singers' voices." He was losing his hearing. And for years, he held out hope that his hearing problem could be fixed. But over time, he came to realize that he was going deaf. An absolutely cruel fate for a musician. After all, a pianist and a composer could work without sight or the use of their legs, but to be deaf seems pretty impossible. And so Beethoven, as he continued to lose his hearing, this greatest performer and composer in a generation was disappearing, not just from the public sphere, but before his own eyes too, because Beethoven entered an era of rage and anger, and for a long time, after he could barely hear, he lived in denial, and he insisted on performing the piano with worse and worse results, and he would bang on keys so hard that he ruined pianos, and he was sad and depressed, and this could have been a sad ending for Beethoven. But through a series of friendships and internal wrestling, he finally gave up performing, and he decided to look to the strengths he did have, composing. And for a time, he would actually gauge the pitch of notes on the piano by putting a pencil in his mouth and touching it to the soundboard while he played. But in the last decade of his life, and Beethoven died at the age of 56, in the last decade, his deafness was complete. And so his compositions could only originate in his imagination. And yet, it was during that period that Beethoven wrote the music that would define his style and change music forever and leave him the legacy as one of the greatest composers of all time. Entirely deaf, Beethoven wrote his best string quartets and symphonies, including the Ninth Symphony, which he conducted at its premiere in Vienna. And it's really cool, after the performance, unaware of the standing ovation behind him, he couldn't hear, Beethoven was physically turned around by one of the musicians to see an audience that was cheering for perhaps the greatest music ever written. But the audience, aware of his deafness, he couldn't hear their clapping. They started throwing their hats and scarves in the air so he could see their enthusiasm. Now, I'm not saying he was ever grateful for his deafness. He was not. It's just he learned to accept this weakness and then to lean into the strengths he did have. And in the same way, TNC, I'm not saying you should want to be weak, but we would all be wise to begin to see that weakness is not purely negative, because weakness will come to all of us. It's the human condition. The secret is to do the work in weakness. first to redefine weakness and discover, hey, it's the source of greater purpose. Today's weakness is tomorrow's strength. It's to share weakness and discover, I have deeper friendships and we can do more together. And it's to accept weakness and to therefore lean into the things that we have in abundance, and most of all, the abundance of God's grace. Let's pray together. God, I pray for every person listening now. And today I pray first for their discouragements and their worries and their stresses and their fears. Will you help them to know that they're not alone, that you're with them, and they have value and hope and possibilities even in this era of weakness? Because when they're weak, then you are strong. And when they're weak, then they can do the work in the weakness, and they can find purpose and friendship and areas of strength to lean into. God, help us to be people who honestly and wisely share our weaknesses. And also help us to give freely and generously of our strengths, so that together we can be built up into a body, a church, a community, a spiritual house that is thriving as you lead us. Now, TNC, may the Lord bless you and keep you, make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.